Martin Palos was one of the first signatories of the Charter 77 protest document. Since 1989, he's been a parliamentary deputy, an academic, and Czech ambassador to Washington. Now, though, Martin Palos is Czech ambassador to the United Nations here in New York. When we met at his office on Madison Avenue, we first discussed Charter 77 and his dissident days.
Obviously, after 1968, there were different options people had. I think three basic options, either to leave the country or to conform with the normalization regime or to try to do something else. And I was sort of inclined to look for this third alternative for years. And obviously, if you are a student, you have your friends, you do things, you observe them, how they want just to conceive their futures and get themselves ready for their professional careers. I was doing the same thing, but at the same time I found difficult to adapt myself to the political requirements, such as entry to the Socialist Union of Youth or doing things like that. So it was bringing me step by step to the circles of then first future dissidents and then dissidents themselves. I signed Charter 77 in December 76, and that was basically it.
Looking back, how important do you think the Charter was in terms of the communist regime finally falling? I mean, many years later, but how important was it?
Obviously, it is rather a question for future historians to make a sound, healthy, and balanced judgment about this. I think that at least for those who have who participated in it, it was existentially extremely important decision. But I think that for the regime, it was a real signal that not everybody was ready to accept all the rules that were set out by normalization regime, that there were still some people willing to raise questions, to express themselves freely. So for this concept, for this type of regime, monolithical, with no public space available, it was a very significant and quite important element.
You were one of many spokespeople for Charter 77. Why were there so many spokespeople, and who were you speaking to? Who were you communicating with?
Well, I would say that there were so many of them. There was a practice then created, or tradition, if you want to say, that each year three new spokesperson of Charter 77 were nominated. This practice started during the late 70s, 78, 79, and then it went on and on till 89 or till 1990. So how many spokespersons we are talking about? 35, 40 people. And obviously our role was to speak on behalf of the Charter 77 to the public. We were kind of public spokesperson, so we spoke, we communicated with everybody who was out there. We signed the documents of Charter 77 to be sent to the government. Obviously, if Charter 77 wanted to present some views and letters, so all these documents were signed by spokespersons.
How do you look back on that era today?
Well, I think that obviously when you look back to to the decades when one was younger, there is always certain element of nostalgia, and I have to admit quite openly it was a kind of adventurous part of my life, so it's another reason. But I think that it was quite informative and important for many reasons. It was very important for me. It still is something I'm thinking about, or I have to admit that if I want to understand politics or political ideas, I very often find myself thinking it through the lenses of my experience in the Charter 77 movement.
Moving forward a bit, or a lot, after 89, you became a minister in the Federal Assembly with Civic Forum. Then you started working, you joined the Czech Foreign Ministry. Then you took a break. Then you came back and you became the Czech ambassador to the U.S. in Washington. Now you're the Czech ambassador to the United Nations here in New York. How do those two jobs compare, Czech ambassador to the U.S. and to the U.N.?
You mean these two last things? Obviously, it's not that far from Washington to New York, but I think that if, in general terms, you want to compare bilateral and multilateral diplomacy, it's a hell of a distance. And obviously, in this particular case, US-UN, it's a very special relationship. United Nations, sometimes people say, live in a kind of bubble here in New York City. It's a world for itself. So certainly it's a different approach, but still one foreign policy of the Czech Republic, and one and the same situation the first years of the 21st century. There are many differences, but obviously I can tremendously benefit from the fact that I had for more than 4 years in Washington, and now that I'm here in the United Nations. Both is very interesting and, I would say, challenging diplomatic task.
Last year, the Czech Republic stood for a non-permanent seat on the UN Security Council. In the end, you were beaten by Croatia. Do you regard that today as a significant defeat for Czech foreign policy?
Well, certainly it was not a victory, but at the same time you have to see it in the context. First, it's true to admit that the Czech Republic already was or has been member of the Security Council in the early 90s, and for Croatia it was for the first time. There were some other factors that may decided in the end, and if you go for this competition, you always need to be ready that you are not going to win everything. Croatia really wanted a lot, so they invested a lot of energy to make it. I think we had a good fight, good struggle. We made our case very clear. We managed to have very friendly relationships with our competitors, with Croatia. One must not understand that you are in a kind of diplomatic war with your opponent, so I would take it calmly, politely, and it's a part of life.
My final question is, you've been now several years in the U.S. What have you learned about the differences or similarities between Europeans like yourself and Americans?
First of all, I like America. Americans are a little different. I think that basis of this difference is that actually you can see it on Ellis Island when you visit this Museum of Migration. There is something in your genetic equipment, the experience of just uprooting yourself somewhere and bringing yourself to a new world. And so this is what makes old continent and new world different. But at the same time, there are so many similarities. And these differences really can be very refreshing. I am very strong pro-Atlanticist. And I think that this is expressed not only on level of, I would say, policies or political relations between the governments, but wherever you go, you have very open communication, so Americans and Europeans, certainly in spite of the Atlantic, divides them belong together.